We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I'm Chinee Ogwumike.
I'm Lisa Leslie, and we're very excited to tell you about our new podcast with Blue Wire, Front and Center.
Lisa and I are breaking down what's going on in our lives, in the world, and keeping it 100.
We're also learning from amazing guests as well, like Emmanuel Acho.
People that show love to me, I forever got their back.
Vivica A. Fox.
If the foundation isn't right, then the rest of it's going to go wrong from there.
And more.
Subscribe to Front and Center today.
Blue Wire.
Breaking news, Terry Rozier. He'll be the next starting point guard of the Charlotte Hornets.
Step back, wide open, and it's good! Terry Rozier!
Lamb has the fire!
Oh! Oh! Right there! Oh! Some frequent flyer miles!
All right, welcome in to another Buzz Beat, your Charlotte Hornets podcast on the Blue Wire Network. This is Richie, and we're back with another episode, and this time we are going to be discussing the plan for the NBA to return pre-Christmas and how that could affect the Hornets. Before we get started, though, we wanted to remind you guys that we'd really appreciate it if you guys could take the 30 seconds out of your day to rate our podcast on Apple Podcast. We can't stress how much that goes into getting our pod more exposure. But with that out of the way, we have Spencer, who is back. Spencer, without boring our listeners, how has your first couple of weeks as a dad been?
Oh, there's nothing boring about it, Richie. Anybody that's a dad out there or a mom will understand that. But it's been good. Got my first night of like 8+ hours of uninterrupted sleep last night, thanks to a family member that came over. So it's, I don't know. I could go on about a bunch of things. What it really is, though, is survive in advance. I mean, each day is its own day, and each night is its own night, and you get through it, and you get on to the next one. So it's awesome.
I feel like you're going to have your best podcast ever. This is your Fred Van Vliet moment, your Mike Conley moment. This is you. You got your dad strength, and it's fusing with your pod strength. And we're going to get an all-timer, I think, from Spencer here today.
I didn't even think about that factor, Brian. Now I'm going to fall flat here. So you just think it was going to be great. Now it's going to fall flat.
Yeah, I should have saved that for after. Yeah, my bad.
So, Brian, it actually looks like you're recording from a different backdrop today. Tell the listeners where you're recording from.
Yeah, this is beautiful Black Mountain, North Carolina. Up here for a few days doing some work and also taking a few days off to get outside and hike around a little bit before basketball season gets started again. So, yeah, for those listening outside of the state, Black Mountain's close to Asheville, but very pretty up here. Leaves have started to change colors, and some really good places I'm looking forward to going on hikes around up here.
Yeah, I wish I was an outdoorsy person. Like, I mean, I love the scenery and the outside, but I'm just not an outdoorsy type of person.
I'm not like a big camper, but I do like to hike. But I feel like most of my friends love to camp, and I'm like, I don't know. I'd rather sleep in a bed inside, but right. I do love to go on hikes though.
Totally with you. Yeah. I like to hike too. And it always seems like one of those things that it's on my, I need to do more of this. And it's just like perpetually on that list that I don't get to enough, but good stuff. Good for you. Perfect time of year to be up there.
All right. We're going to go ahead and jump into the relatively new announcement that the NBA is targeting a December 22nd start date. At the time of this recording, this piece of news isn't really officially official, as the NBPA would still have to sign off on this. Also mentioned in this report is that the NBA prefers a 72-game schedule so they can end around their normal schedule, which would also allow the NBA players to participate in the 2021 Olympics, whatever that looks like. But I think we should start by giving our kind of initial thoughts to this news. To me, it was a bit of a shock that they're pushing this pre-Christmas date. I thought Christmas at the earliest, but really I was kind of anticipating actually sometime in January. I was never one that actually thought, though, that it would be like a mid-February, late February start date. I just think that was just too far back into the schedule that you would normally start your NBA schedule. But this does feel a little bit ambitious. But from a financial standpoint, guys, it's just too logical for the NBA to start as soon as possible. With the way that the previous season ended, just with the uncertainty of the future, it just makes too much dollars, too much sense for them not to start this thing as soon as possible. And they've already lost ticket revenue, right? And now they're going to lose ticket revenue moving forward. And I understand why they're pushing this date, but I just was never expecting it. And two, like another point in terms of like the calendar, like you don't want the NBA calendar too far off from where it was or where it is supposed to be, especially when it coincides with the college season and all that and how that can affect things down the road. Spencer, I've got other thoughts on this, but that was just kind of my gut instinct when this news came out. What were your initial thoughts when you heard this?
Yeah, well, I mean, certainly, like you said, surprise just from standpoint of like, whoa, that's let's check the calendar here. That's less than 2 months away. So that is a bit of a shock to the system. But I mean, just like most things in this world, it's purely financial. You know, the NBA estimates that they can generate an extra $500 million by starting on the 22nd. You know, getting the Christmas Day games in, playing a 72-game schedule, and you know, and playing the entire playoffs, that's what's going to get this done, right? Like players, certain players especially, can be very unhappy about this, and I'm certainly sympathetic to that. But at some point, we got to get the league back on track from a revenue and financial standpoint, and I understand that's going to, you know, come with some physical and mental health and family health challenges. But you know what? We've never been in times like this. These are novel times. And so those kind of extraordinary circumstances take some extraordinary sacrifices. And I think that's what the players are going to have to understand here. And that's going to be hard for certain ones, but I'm pretty confident this gets done, as crazy as it sounds. It's definitely ambitious, but I think they're going to get this done and probably by the end of the week, if not very close. I think the 30th was that pushback deadline that the Players Association in the league kind of decided. So it's I was reading Hollinger's piece on The Athletic. It's going to be like drinking from a fire hose when that moratorium is lifted. It is going to get busy fast.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy just because, you know, the draft kept getting pushed back so that it could be synced up with free agency, you know, ahead of the next season. And now there's going to be such a compressed timeline because you've got the draft November 18th. You've got training camp probably opening up December 1st. So you've got literally less than 2 weeks with Thanksgiving in the middle of all of that. And the college season starting around that time too, which is something that front offices have to take into account from a scouting perspective. So yeah, there's going to be a lot of moving parts at the same time. I feel like I've said this just a lot in general this year about everything, but I'm surprised and I'm not at all surprised. Like the financial gain is just so significant. And it, you know, now that it does seem like they're going to start before Christmas, it's like they were going to do whatever it took to not give up those Christmas games. I mean, that is sacred real estate for the NBA. For a variety of reasons, again, all of which tie back into the almighty dollar, I guess, for them as well. But, you know, even a week ago, if you had asked me, I would have said no way. Like Martin Luther King Day in January, like that's the earliest start. But I'm not surprised this is going on. The cash incentive, the ability to try to like sort of recenter the calendar. And I think this ties back into, you know, the bubble starting back up, like not delaying that season until the fall, like actually trying to get the bubble in place to finish that season so that they could then get the clock started on the 2021 season. So I think those things, you know, are tied together. I'm kind of surprised to hear the Olympics, the 2021 Olympics, brought up so frequently within discussions to the NBA calendar. Like, I get it. There are a lot of guys that want to play for their home country, Team USA, anywhere around the world. But even when they were discussing the restart calendar for the 1920 season, they were sort of trying to factor in, you know, how would the Olympics would play into that as well, too, and as those got pushed back to 2021. So I'm a little surprised that there's any sort of like real coordination between those two entities, but I suppose that's a mistake on my part. But yeah, no, I guess this does allow the league to get back to a semi-normal calendar going forward, especially for the 21-22 season. So I get it from that perspective, but man, it is super ambitious.
And to your point, Brian, I'm not even sure these NBA players are even thinking about the Olympics right now, considering if they're going to have to go on short rest here, especially the teams that obviously that made the playoffs. And I mean, just play the college kids. I mean, I think the Olympics have kind of lost its appeal in a certain sense. But man, like the feasibility of this, guys, they're trying to get 72 games in out of this, and they also are saying they prefer in market games and not a bubble. Mm-hmm. So just to kind of put this in perspective, most teams by mid to late December have already played 30 games. So that means they have 50 games left on the calendar. Yeah. The NBA is trying to get 72 games from that point onward. Obviously, the schedule might be pushed back a little bit, but again, they're trying to keep it in the same ballpark. And I guess the good thing is, I guess you'd call it a good thing, they're not going to try to do an All-Star weekend, which is going to give you some flexibility there. But man, the feasibility of how this is going to work and the travel, like there's clearly a whole lot more details that will have to come out on this, but it may even feel like the MLB in a sense where they might have to play teams multiple times in a row to cut down on that travel. But man, I can only imagine how taxing this is going to be on the players, especially just like the sacrifices that they'll have to make moving forward in this upcoming season. So
it feels like that kind of scheduling is going to have to make sense for college basketball this season too, right? Playing like the same team consecutively, like, you know, trying to get as many games in with that opponent as you can before moving on, cycling through to the next person, or the next team, I should say.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, I really think that you'll probably end up seeing some Western Conference games against Eastern Conference, but it's going to be a lot fewer, and that's going to be a topic when we get midseason about the playoffs. You're just going to hear, as if the East versus West playoff discussion isn't always hyped up. It's going to be exacerbated this year because the East is going to play more games against the East than they typically would. I think Charlotte's not going to go out and play LA teams twice, right? That's not going to happen. And I would be surprised if teams from the East Coast fly out to the West Coast at all, you know? So it's going to be interesting.
It is crazy that we've hit this part where, you know, in the middle of March, the Rudy Gobert Oklahoma City incident happens and the league shuts down and goes its separate ways for 4 months. And then all of the precautions and financial investments that went into the bubble, making sure it was airtight and as possible, and like had all these layers, just the financial investment and the thought exercises that went into that. It's crazy in my, like, I'm not surprised they're trying to come back in December. I understand the motivations for them wanting to do that, which we sort of just ran through. But it is, man, it's just a weird mixed message, in my opinion, from how the league was trying to operate for the majority of 2020 post coronavirus, you know, really becoming a factor, to how they're going to try to restart the next season. And I don't know. It's a little bit of cognitive dissonance, I feel like, between those two. But I don't know what else to say. I think it's just a little inconsistent and weird, but yeah. I do understand why they're doing it.
I think it's worth mentioning, too, the NHL is looking at like a very similar model in terms of just moving up their season. And I mean, this all goes back to, like, there's just no path to coronavirus not being in our lives until next fall. Like, there's just... even if there was a vaccine that attempted to hit the market, there's only going to be a certain amount of the population is going to be willing to take it. So the league is just saying we have to protect the 21-22 schedule, we have to protect that schedule because there's a chance by then everything could normalize. Like we could be back to normal. We can get the gate receipts on top of the TV revenue. So what we have to do now is we have to get every penny of TV revenue out of this coming season that's possible. And the only way to do that and satisfy those regional TV deals, which are the most important, if every team's going to get a bite of the cake here, is to start now and get those Christmas games in. So it's, man, there's going to be a lot of information over the next 4 weeks. I can tell you that. It's going to be almost way too much to take in because there's going to be a lot of unhappy campers in the NBA.
And if I remember correctly, too, from our discussions involving the restart, I think 72 is like right at that benchmark number for a lot of those regional sports TV deals that satisfy the obligation between the team and the, you know, the media network or what a media company. So that number is not random either. Right.
Right.
The 72 number total that's been thrown out there. There's a financial reason for that as well.
Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. You only pay for what you need, you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is the best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through December 31st. Football is back in full swing. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team and player and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, divisions, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Before we move on to the side with the Hornets and maybe how this could affect them, do you guys have any suggestions on how to make this run smoother? You know, Spencer, you mentioned maybe not having teams fly out to the West Coast, but any suggestions you want to throw out there, you know, if you were part of the decision-making process here to kind of make this thing run smoother?
I would just, I don't know if like regional bubbles is the right word, but I think like if, you know, I've heard a lot of talk and you've read a bunch of stuff about like, well, Charlotte flies to Cleveland, for example, and just go ahead and play two or three games in mm-hmm. Cleveland, whatever the schedule says should be done. But I would say try to get four teams in however many different sites that is and play round robin for however long that is. I mean, anything you can do to decrease the probability of something happening like the NFL has experienced and the MLB to a smaller extent. I mean, I'm kind of surprised the NFL has made it this far, to be honest with you, because they're flying across the country. And I mean, they're not trying to cut down their probability too much. So the NBA has those things to learn from. And I think the more teams they can get in one location for 4 days, 5 days a week, and play as many games as possible, I think the better. And then you still allow these teams and these players to get home to their families and get home to, like, that's the part, I think, the human part that the NBA is going to have the toughest time fulfilling is these guys are not going to go for a bubble setting again, and they should.
No.
But how do we keep them in one place, get as many games as possible in, and also get these guys home to their families as much as possible? That part is going to be really difficult, I think.
Yeah, it's going to be tough because there were some aspects of what made the bubble work when you took a step back and looked at it. They were they were sort of harsh if you're looking at coaches and players as human beings, which they are, right? Like coaches' families could not come to the bubble, right? This is something that Mike Malone had strong comments on during the bubble. And so, yeah, I don't know, man. It's going to be tough because while the NBA certainly built up some equity with the success of the bubble, and I'm sure they're going to be, it's going to be a lot of the same people that are going to be collaborating to figure out like how the NBA is going to do this 72 game season now. You know, there are going to be some tough decisions at play because so much is going to be centered on building as many layers as you possibly can. But there's going to be way more moving parts because it's not going to be in a controlled environment like the bubble. So yeah, they're really going to be sort of like running on a razor's edge here with a timeline that is accelerated to say the least here.
Spencer or Brian, do you guys think there's any potential that you mentioned the MLB, Spencer, that the NBA takes the route of where they're not playing every team in the league and they just kind of have a set number of teams that they play against and you pick teams that are in close proximity to you to kind of limit the travel time? Or do you think that just creates too much of an imbalance when it comes to scheduling?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. And I think that a lot of things are in play when you try to answer that, things that we don't have the answer to. Like I'm thinking, is Fox Sports Southeast, you know, can you fulfill that TV contract if the Lakers and the Clippers and LeBron James and Kawhi Leonard are not in front of your viewers? You know, yeah. Stuff like that. You know what I mean? Like that's deep in the weeds, but it matters if this is a financial decision of why we're doing this. But yeah, I mean, I think there's a possibility the Western Conference plays the Western Conference and the Eastern Conference plays the Eastern Conference and we repeat the bubble again, you know, next fall or whatever it is. So, or excuse me, in the summer. I mean, I think that is an outside possibility. And I think that if there's a league that would do something like that, again, to decrease the probability of a spread and a repeat of the Rudy Gobert situation, I think the NBA would be the league that would do that.
That's a good answer. And it's a really good question too, Richie. I think at the end of the day, there's certainly a good chance for a schedule that looks that has a little less balance on average than a normal 82 game NBA schedule because they just want inventory, right? Like the owners in the league, they want inventory for TV to sell to pitch to the networks and to be able to sell to advertisers. So they just want the inventory. But Spencer brought up a great point, which is that if that inventory has less LeBron James in it or less some of the, you know, less Chris Paul or Kevin Durant or whatever, I don't know. Is it as valuable, even if it's the same, even if it's sort of hitting the same, you know, required numbers
Because
actual televised products?
I could be wrong here, but I don't think all these TV contracts are made equal. The small markets need the firepower. Mm-hmm. They need the LeBron James games in there. And if you don't have those, I think that negotiation becomes, if I'm on the TV side, the conversation changes now.
Yeah.
If I know I'm not going to have those guys. So, but we'll see.
Yeah. I guess I don't really think about the TV side when I'm thinking about this, but like that would be my one suggestion to try to make it mimic the MLB schedule as much as possible and keep those teams in close proximity, even if it did create some kind of like schedule imbalance there. So.
And just like side note as well, like those regional sports networks right now, like this is outside. Now we're going outside of coronavirus, you know, how that impacts the NBA. Like you can't get Fox Sports regional networks on YouTube TV right now, correct?
Or Hulu.
You know, or Hulu. So like they've got 2 months to figure that out too. I mean, that was like there was a minor scare with that during this most recent season. Yep. And then they were able to come to an agreement between YouTube TV and I guess Sinclair is, you know, the owner of a lot of these regional sports networks. But like, all of a sudden that gets baked into this cake now too, because that is another existential threat here of some kind.
And one thing I will say, not that it solves the imbalance of my suggestion with scheduling, but I do love how the NBA is still keeping that play-in option open for that eighth and ninth seed. So if there's some kind of discrepancy there, you know, the ninth seed might argue that their schedule was harder and that maybe they could get into the playoffs regardless. So I do think that's pretty cool that they're kind of including that as a possible potential option moving forward. Now, let's go over to the Charlotte Hornets side of things. And this news of the abbreviated offseason, a lot of people argue that it hurts the playoff teams and the teams that obviously made it farther within the bubble. But I think maybe you could also make the argument that it hurts a team like Charlotte, who has not been able to play with these players, you know, side by side under game environment. So, Brian, do you have a strong feeling either way on this, if this abbreviated offseason hurts or helps Charlotte?
Yeah, I mean, I think it can, I don't, because I think it can split a couple of different ways. You know, it does get the team back on the court sooner. And we heard how many times, especially early in the bubble or when it really seemed like the second bubble wasn't going to happen, you could hear some of the teams that weren't able to be a part of the NBA's restart, including the Hornets, were frustrated, right? Because they were saying, well, it's going to be 9 months before we can get these young guys back out on the court. So they will be able to get those guys back on the court, you know, maybe a month before they thought they were going to, as recently as like a week or so ago. So there's that aspect of it. The Hornets are a team that has cap space, but that can cut so many different ways now too, because depending on where they end up setting the cap, where they end up setting the tax line, like that's going to have ramifications between how much money could get paid back to a team like the Hornets, how much space they'll actually have to either go out and try to sign a free agent or two, or to, you know, allow that space to be rented out in exchange for assets. I think there are pros and cons, but it's just going to be hard to map out a lot of this stuff because everything's going to be happening so quickly. Like, they have 3 draft picks coming in on the 18th of November, and then free agency will start, you know, I guess right after that. So I don't know. I feel like there's a chance where I guess you could also look at it this way, which is that if more teams need to shed salary, depending on where they set the cap and the tax line at, then perhaps the Hornets is a team that has space. They become more, even if they have less of it, maybe they become a little more valuable because there are more teams that are looking to get off salary. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's another added bonus, but I think this is going to be a lot of hard work ahead. And I'm not sure if it really, there are a whole lot of advantages here for a small market team like Charlotte.
Yeah, I don't have a strong feeling either way on this either, Brian. I think you could make the argument that obviously Charlotte is well rested, is in a better position, physically than some of these teams that made these late playoff runs. But by the same token, they do have less talent. We'll have gone close to 10 months without actually playing a game together. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the point of, you know, maybe teams trying to shed salary. Spencer, wouldn't they have to have the salary cap in place prior to the draft? Not even before like free agency. They need to have this, you know, ready to go before the draft, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the moratorium is going to have to lift because teams are going to want to make trades before the draft.
Correct.
Or should at least have the opportunity to. It shouldn't only be draft by trade. So, yeah, the cap's got to be set. The tax has got to be set. That matters to the Hornets. You know, if the tax comes down, that's bad news for a team like the Hornets because they're a non-tax-paying team. So, so the more tax dollars there are, they get the chunks of those pie. There's only four teams in the league right now that are going to get chunks of that tax money. So they're hoping that stays up. I think both you guys said it right. I mean, I think this does cut both ways. The one set thing I would say about Charlotte, though, to hold them accountable is there's no excuse for them not to be prepared. The basketball side of it, the on-court part, that's different. All right. Mm-hmm. It can be super ugly when we start playing games on the 22nd for Charlotte, and nobody should really be that surprised. But in terms of what happens this offseason, it would not be a good look for Charlotte if they swung and missed on free agency and the draft more than they hit, right? Because they've had 10 months here to pour their resources into preparation. Now there's another side to that, that when the moratorium does lift and transactions do begin, yes, Charlotte's a cap space team. They can take on bad contracts. There's going to be more teams that are looking to dump salary, I would think, than before all this because of financial concerns. But when this stuff starts happening, it's going to happen really, really, really fast. So if you're not prepared and know when Indiana calls and they're like, we got Miles Turner, we want to dump him, we'll attach a first round pick. What, you know, I'm just throwing out something dumb.
Right.
Take it or leave it right now. I got to get on the other line. You better be ready because those opportunities are now going to come and they're going to go quicker because there's less time. So, yeah. So you guys said it. I mean, it cuts both ways. But again, Charlotte has no excuse. They should be prepared here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a sped up offseason, but they've had plenty of time to prepare for all these different types of scenarios. And maybe I'm overthinking this when it comes to restricted free agents, but I wonder if teams will be less likely to throw out offer sheets for restricted free agents this offseason because of that like 48-hour wait period. I know it's just 2 days, mm-hmm. but it just feels like in that sped up offseason, you know, you don't have time to think and wait like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I just think, and this kind of goes back to like the Christian Wood take I had a month and a half ago or whatever. I just, to me, giving that guy $15 million a year, whatever. I'm just throwing out a number. Mm-hmm. That's not such a bad contract to me. I don't really know what the value is of Charlotte's 21 cap space when there's 12 or 13 other teams, possibly many more. Yeah. They're just going to be like, they're going to be so far in the background. Mm-hmm. I think there's actually more of an opportunity for them to spend wisely this summer. I'm not talking about Serge Ibaka or, you know, Danilo Gallinari, somebody that doesn't line up with the age timeline, but a guy like Christian Wood or Malik Beasley, throwing them maybe a little bit more than the experts would say the market demands for a small market like Charlotte, when they're one of four in the whole league that can spend that. Mm-hmm. I don't think you can look at that and immediately say terrible deal. It's not fair because Charlotte's not going to matter next summer when they have more cap space than any other team in the league, because none of those top 10 guys are coming here. So I would strike now, or at least think about it.
They have some buyer's power for sure, because they have the space right now. So you name Christian Wood. I think there are a few other names that you could sling around. But you know, maybe even dip your toe into the restricted free agent pool, because maybe you can afford to have a little of that space sort of perhaps compromised periodically or temporarily. And there are some interesting restricted free agents. I don't see the Hornets necessarily being a play for someone like Bogdanovich in Sacramento, because I imagine the Kings will try to bring him back. But you don't know, I guess. I think there are some interesting things Charlotte can do, because a guy like Christian Wood is also like, if you bring Christian Wood in, he's going to make you better offensively, which they could certainly use that. He fits the age timeline. And also, like, I don't think it's going to make you like take you out of the lottery, you know, which I still think that Charlotte needs to be focused on getting another, another chance, you know, trying to win the lottery, get a high lottery pick in 2021.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it could still be viewed, if you give Christian Wood $15 million a year over however many years, it can still be viewed as asset accumulation. He's a young guy. Yeah. You can definitely trade that contract down the road. You got to lean on your development staff. But here's the deal. Charlotte's ability to use their cap space in a salary dump kind of move comes next offseason. So if they sign a free agent with most of their cap space this year, you have him under contract next year. Even if you also get the Devontae extension done, you still have over $50 million in cap space next offseason. So as soon as the moratorium lifts and we get ready to go to draft and this grand 21 free agent class starts, do you know how many teams are be looking to dump money then? That's when you strike with a deal like that, to me. And this team will still not, to Brian's point, will still not be winning enough games to be considered a playoff team. They're still going to be in the lottery. So I think this summer holds some water in terms of free agency.
Yeah, as of right now, Charlotte only has about $41.5 million guaranteed on the books for 21-22. Now, there's plenty of other stuff tied up in holds and potential, an extension with Malik Monk or something like that. But right now, they're going to have acres of space. It's not bad to see fitting in a good player, especially someone that fits the timeline, on a contract. I don't know if Wood is interested in Charlotte, but I think he's an interesting possibility, for especially because Charlotte's gonna be, it's gonna be tough for them to be a player in free agency with this loaded class next year.
The only other thing I would add is, when we talk about free agency, where Charlotte can go wrong is what I mentioned earlier, is that spending to like truly quote unquote win now, which would be Serge Ibaka or Danilo Gallinari. I'm probably missing a name. Like, spending money on a guy that's over the 30-year-old hump would really be a head-scratcher to me, and your kind of traditional MJ move. But I think a lot of people were surprised by the Al Jefferson signing a number of years ago. That ended up working out pretty well for them. But I think that's the move right now that Charlotte really doesn't need. So that's the last thing I would say about free agency.
Yeah, totally agree. I don't see any purpose in doing that kind of route with the free agency aspect here. So the NBA draft, November 18th, is less than a month away. Feels like we're starting to get a sense of who the Hornets will be drafting, or at least who is going to be available in those slots of players right there at the third overall pick. Brian, I hate to say this, but it feels like we can't count out Wiseman ending up in Charlotte. It just feels like it's headed that direction, or at least a strong possibility.
Yeah, and look, I mean, I think if you listen to this podcast, you sort of know where I stand on Wiseman. I don't think he's a great pick at three, but as I described it a couple months ago, if you do draft James Wiseman, it's not like the sky is falling. Like, I still think James Wiseman is like a rotation center in the NBA, and maybe if he taps into any of this potential, then you actually have something. To be clear, I don't think Wiseman should be the pick at three. And I don't know, was the Ringer reporting something, or were they just floating speculation that the Hornets would maybe try to move up to two to draft Wiseman? Like, that would be insane.
It was certainly aggregated as a report. So
yeah,
sorry,
like,
keep going.
That makes no sense to me, especially because like there's a strong possibility if you really want Wiseman, he's at three. Moving up in this draft in any way, shape, or form, unless you're really doing it from a position of power, is a really bad idea. Like a team like the Celtics, I could see, we've discussed the possibility of them packaging some of these first round picks, and if there was a guy they really liked, trying to move up for those purposes. But for a team like Charlotte that's rebuilding and is trying to add as many of these pieces as they can, no, it makes no sense, especially if it's a 2022 unprotected pick. Like, that's a great asset. You're not trading that to move up one or two notches to draft James Wiseman. Like, that's just ludicrous.
That's insane. I can't believe that was floated out there, but I can't believe it. I take
that could be the number one pick. You know what I mean? Like, that literally could be the number one pick. It seriously could. So there's just no way in planet Earth you do that. If Wiseman's your guy and he's at three and they draft him, I'm skeptical for so many reasons about that guy, and I'll own those. But at the same time, like, I've never come on here and said, I've never on this podcast said, you know, James Wiseman is bad or not a good prospect. Like, again, I think he's a guy that plays in the NBA for a long time and offers you a discrete set of skills that fit and could help Charlotte out. I just think there's more value at that number three pick, even if LaMelo Ball and Anthony Edwards come off the board 1-2 in some order. I think Killian Hayes is a very strong prospect. And I think there are a variety of other guys that I would be more comfortable with at Wiseman at a variety of different slots in the draft too. So no, I think there's also a chance that you could see Ball or Edwards fall to three. That's sort of exciting. If Edwards, that I think maybe the more likely of those two to do that. But I'm not surprised to see Charlotte and Wiseman linked together, but at this point, it's tough to read like what's real and what's a smokescreen. Because I mean, even if you look out west, you see Golden State every other day. There's a new prospect that the Warriors are circling. It was Obi Toppin yesterday. That's who the Warriors are considering at number two. It's been Denny Avdija. Yeah. It's been James Wiseman. It's been Onyeka Okongwu. So like it's tough, especially from the outside. It's tough to get like a good read on that, but. As long as the Hornets like don't try to move up in this draft, especially when you have the number three pick, it's still like a good asset and you can get a good player, if not a great prospect with that pick.
Yeah, my feeling is I actually don't think, just my gut instinct, I would say like a less than 5 or less than 1% chance that Charlotte actually moves off of this pick in either direction, whether they go down or whether they go up with this pick. I just feel like they're going to stay right at three. You let the rumors fly around with Golden State, and it feels like even Minnesota might be shopping their pick. But you just let those first two picks happen if there's trades that occur, And to the point of the rumor about trading up two picks and also getting off a future asset, you know, the difference between the first overall pick and the third overall pick in this draft is just not that there's not a big enough gap for me to fall in love with someone to move up while also losing a future pick. And I get the sense that Ball, Edwards, or Wiseman are all in play for Mitch Kupchak, and he's always said that that talent acquisition is his top priority. But back to the point about Wiseman, where it feels like it just, I just get this sense that he's going to be there at three and then Charlotte's going to take him. To Brian's point, like I wouldn't be overly happy with Wiseman, but I feel like I'm starting to slowly, like real slow, warm up to him as a possible pick. And maybe it's just me preparing for like the inevitable. But yeah, like I said, I do think there's a strong chance that Edwards falls at three. And Ball might be the only one that I don't think is going to be there, whether Minnesota or Golden State drafts him or someone, you know, trades up to get them. So mm-hmm. I'm warming up to the idea of Wiseman, but it's probably more out of the fact that I feel like it's inevitable. I'm hoping that Edwards falls to number three.
Yeah, it's just such an obvious draft to where you wait, see what the best player available is. It falls to three. To Richie's point, don't get too excited about trading, even trading down. Draft the most tradable player, right? Like lean on your player development. Get him in the house. Even if you don't think he's going to be a part of your long-term future, get him in here, develop him a little bit. You can always trade him after the draft. So I'm afraid, obviously, because it's my natural inclination as a Hornets fan about this, you know, moving up to draft James Wiseman and giving up an unprotected future pick. But at the same time, I think this is a classic, you know, national media. I don't think many of them are plugged in here in Charlotte. I think there's a little bit of animosity depending on which national media personality it is. And they're just the easy punching bag sometimes. And now that they have the third pick and this is a draft where it seems everybody in the top four wants to trade out, Charlotte's the dumb team that's going to trade up, right? Like this is just kind of classic stuff to me. So wouldn't read too much into it, but yeah, I agree with you guys. Wiseman, it is what it is. I'm not real excited about it if it happens. But Richie, yeah, you're just preparing yourself as a Hornets fan. That's what we do naturally.
they had a good draft last year, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's just, I don't understand why anyone would look at Charlotte and just assume that they wouldn't want to go into, the next draft during, you know, this sort of fairly early stage in a rebuild, basically like 15 months into 18 months into a rebuild. And just start lighting assets on fire so they can move up one spot in the draft to draft a guy that could absolutely be there at
right,
three,
right.
Especially when they've literally now had, I know Miles Bridges hasn't really worked out so well, but like they got Devontae Graham in 2018. He's a pretty good basketball player, right? Like they've done well in the draft the last two seasons. They had a great draft in 2019. I just feel like it makes all the sense in the world. This is to go into the draft, and we know that the number three pick this is not the best year to have the number three pick unless you're good at drafting, you know? And right now the Hornets have done some good things the last couple of years. And as with regards to the draft, and look, 2018 is not perfect because, you know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander looks like a stud in the making now in Oklahoma City, and Miles Bridges is still sort of floundering, but like they got an extra asset out of that pick and that turned into Devontae Graham. And they went and got PJ Washington and Cody Martin and McDaniels last year. So then now they're going into this draft with three picks again, and one of them's a top three pick. So I just don't see why you would short circuit anything at this point. So no, I think they're you're doing well and you're drafting well and you've got plenty shots at the, you know, plenty of chances to add some good young pieces on great contracts this year. So why jump the gun on anything for a marginal gain?
Yeah, and to the point Brian was making a minute ago about the Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, that seemed like the wrong pick taking Miles there, but something that I think people forget sometimes, Kupchak did a nice job of fooling. Now, it's not going to maybe work out the way we envision, but they floated out. Oh, the Hornets love SGA. That's all you heard for like 3 days leading up to the draft, how much the Hornets loved him. And then they flipped that pick at the last second to get an extra asset when LA took him. So yes, SGA ended up being the right player, but I think the strategy there is important to remember because I think it could be similar in this draft. you know, I feel like people forget that Kupchak actually did a little bit of a Houdini act in that draft to get an extra asset with just a difference of a few picks. So I just, this whole thing about trading up, I don't buy it. I just don't buy it.
I always go back to that Shea pick, and I wonder if the Hornets had traded Kemba when they probably should have, would they have kept Shea, or would they have targeted Shea and kept Shea because Kemba was on the roster at that point? So I do wonder that aspect of it. Let me ask you guys this quick question. Let's just say Golden State and Minnesota stay where they're at. Go ahead and give me month out top three picks in order. Go ahead, Brian. Shoot. Just go 1, 2, 3.
Let's say they stay where they are. We'll go. We're gonna go LaMelo 1, mm-hmm. Edwards 2, Wiseman 3, I guess. Although, I don't know if Golden State would go Edwards, man.
I don't think so.
God, it's just tough because if I was picking 1, 2, 3, which is not what you asked, right. I would go LaMelo, Killian, and Edwards, and I'd feel very happy with either of those. I think I like all three of those guys a good bit. So I don't know, maybe Golden State really wants a five, and they really like Wiseman or Okongwu. So, but I'll just strictly on I think I'll go LaMelo, Edwards, and Wiseman.
Yeah, I would go LaMelo, then I would go Wiseman, and I think Edwards, you know, a month out, obviously, there's a whole lot more rumors to come by, and then Edwards falls to Charlotte at 3. But again, I'm still inevitably thinking Wiseman.
That would be a nice situation. That would not be bad for that to happen.
I do agree with you guys. I think it goes LaMelo, Wiseman, Edwards, but I will not, like, there's no way Golden State wants to pick any of those guys. They want to trade this pick. They're going to try as hard as they can to the very last second. So I say that to say, if they get down to the wire and they cannot trade that pick, I do think they're probably going to draft a Denny or a Killian or a Tyrese Haliburton, somebody who can come in and help them right away. I do think they'll do that if they can't trade the pick.
Yeah, I could see that. Okongwu, I mean,
Okongwu is another one. Yeah,
he gives him a dive guy at center too.
I think Haliburton really helps them, actually, maybe more than any of these. Like, he can come in and play right now. And like I said, if they can't trade the pick and they get to the last second, I think they're just going to be like, look, our window is now. We got to take a player and come in and help us now. We're trying to win a championship. So
yeah.
All right, guys, thanks again for joining us for another Buzz Beat. We really do appreciate all the love and support you guys have been showing us recently, and we will see you guys next time.